In the whole side of the house, in the back.
Oh, really? Do we have a form? All right, I'm going to call the meeting to order. Will you join me in the salute of the flag? Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Would you call the board, please?
Chair Manchin.
Right here.
Vice Chair Ebley. Commissioner Durr. Commissioner Earp.
Here.
Commissioner Gallagher.
Here.
Commissioner Jones.
Present.
Commissioner Liang. Commissioner Lopez.
Here.
Commissioner Quill.
Here.
Vice Chair Ebley, Commissioner Durr, and Commissioner Liang are excused. We have quorum.
And would you administer the oath, please?
Those wishing to speak, please stand and raise your right hand. Do you solemnly affirm that the testimony you are about to give before this body will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you. You may be seated.
Is there a need for a closed session tonight?
No, Chair.
Okay. Then in that case, we'll take the consent agenda. What do we have tonight?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
If I may, I'm going to have to excuse myself to the item for holy word.
Can you stay on the...
The guidelines are to abstain yourself and to leave the room.
Okay. I was wondering, is he allowed to sit in the audience?
The guidelines are to leave the room. he's welcome to view from the hallway. Sorry, Commissioner Quill.
Thank you.
So the consent agenda.
Yes, thank you, Chair and Commissioners. There are two items on the consent calendar this evening. The first item is approval of the July 11th, 2017 Planning Commission minutes, and staff is recommending approval. The second item is approval of a sign program 1701 for the property located at 2620 North Arrowhead Avenue. That is Aquinas High School.
Holy Rosary Academy.
That's okay. Wrong application. I should read what's in front of me.
That's
thank
okay.
you, John Paul. Staff is recommending approval on that item as well. There are a couple of minor changes that I believe Chantal wanted to make to the resolution.
Right. So in resolution section 3, condition of approval number 1. The address and zoning just needed some minor changes. There was no space in between the address and the number of the address. And then should be residential suburban, RS zone. And section number 9 or condition, sorry, section number 9, fire department should be included in section 10 as an outside agency. And that was it for that one.
Staff is recommending approval of both of those items on consent with the minor changes noted to the resolution.
I would like to make a motion.
Oh, I'd like to make a comment on the sign. I just happened No, this was just around the corner from my house, and we had, it was up for a while, so we had an opportunity to see it in place. We're not trying to imagine this. I just have one request. If, I don't know if this could be written into it, maybe it's just a neighborly thing to do. Is it, the brightness and the color of the sign was kind of out of character with the residential neighborhood. If it could be toned down, especially at night, that would be appreciated.
There is a condition here to turn it off at 10 p.m.
Okay.
Would that be sufficient?
Well, I was just thinking more of the evening hour.
Chair, I have a quick question. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, although I do. you said you're in the neighborhood. How close to the school do you live, Commissioner?
Around the corner.
Would you say within 500 feet of
yes.
the school?
Yes.
Okay.
Why do you do?
Leave the room too? Yes.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Thank you for mentioning it. Under the conflict of interest rules, generally speaking, someone who lives within a close distance to a project is required to recuse themselves.
Okay.
Same, just as
okay.
Commissioner Quill did. And thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Sure. My apologies.
But that does leave the commission without a quorum. you're running out of commissioners.
What? No.
They could only put vote on this amendment.
The item can be removed from the consent agenda today, and I apologize for those in the audience who came to speak on this and wanted it approved today. My recommendation would be that the item be continued to a future meeting, could be the next meeting, when a quorum of commissioners who do not have a disqualifying interest may be present. There's a doctrine called necessity, where we can't find enough people who don't have an interest, we can vote on it, but I don't think that exists in this case because we have at least three other commissioners who presumably don't live within 500 feet or own wheel signs. My recommendation would be to continue it and then to vote upon the minutes and invite the commissioners back into the room.
Okay. So should we make a motion just approving the minutes from July 11th?
Well, if we're going to approve the minutes, we should invite the commissioners back in. We only have four commissioners at the dais right now.
You
lack a quorum. You wouldn't be able to approve the minutes. Then simply bring them back in. You could vote upon the minutes and continue number two to the next meeting.
Okay.
And if I wasn't even here for the minutes, I can't second it. Or
That's generally been a practice of commissioners. If they weren't at the meeting, it's difficult for them to speak to their correctness. But it is not a rule. You're not prohibited from voting or making a motion.
And if I may, the next meeting is going to be September 12th.
Is it possible that I might text one of the commissioners that maybe could... Will we be here very long on the other items? I mean, is it possible that someone were to be arrived and they would be able to take care of this tonight for them? Am I making any sense?
Apparently,
absolutely.
The other three said they wouldn't be able to make it at
okay.
all. Unfortunately, I'm sorry, that the item, due to a lack of quorum, as the city attorney has said, that the item does need to be continued.
For the commissioners who were out of the room, Commissioner Quill, we discovered that Commissioner Earp lives within 500 feet of the project, and so abstained himself, and that resulted in a lack of quorum for the item. So the item is being continued to the next meeting, and I believe there's a motion that I don't know if it's been made yet, but the intent was to have a motion to approve the minutes only.
I see. Would you like to make your motion?
Yes, I would like to make a motion approving the minutes of July 11th, 2017.
We have a second.
Second.
We have a second. Those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? No. It passes. So now, we can't vote on the consent agenda, item two then.
I believe the motion was to approve and to continue that item to the next meeting.
Okay.
When presumably we will have five commissioners who do not have a conflict.
All right, so do we need a motion on that?
I believe you've already had your motion.
Okay.
Well, that leaves us at non-public hearing items.
Yes.
Since we can't have a public hearing, we have a speaker who has something that's not on the agenda, and I would like to invite you to speak on that, Mr. Mitchell.
Good evening from Vermont.
Okay.
I've been here before. It's kind of a refresher meeting, and I've also got an invite for all of you. Besides the Little League games that are going on right now. Speaking for the residents of Vermont, we're out of bankruptcy, and the city's looking really good. Construction is getting ready to kick into another gear up in Vermont. And the residents for years have always had concerns, and the concerns mostly start with our lack of infrastructure that's not there for the future build-out and development. The density projects that are being presented that are greater density than is actually zoned up there. Maintaining the rural flavor of Vermont, it's pretty rural up there. We're worried about the designs of build-out and the streets. Some of the streets are going to be very steep. The traffic speeds coming down the hills and the schools that are at the bottom of those hills. Fire safety, water, hydrology, the drainage, the basins that they will have to design. And they're concerned how development will age in the next 10 to 20 years. All this has to be considered. Vermont's got some really very specific needs and idiosyncrasies, to say the least. Some developers have glossed over those with mitigated inaccuracies. And the residents have been made very uneasy because some of those inaccurate mitigations on the EIRs have been accepted by the city in past. I'm real confident in the staff that we have now. In fact, I'm super confident. and the reason I say that is because I want to thank Mr. Marie Malika, Mr. Persico, and Jim Dickmeyer, who's not here. These three gentlemen took their own valuable time and came up there and allowed me to tour them around Vermont on all the new projects that are going to be built out. And most of that land is hard to access or inaccessible. And I took them off-road and on-road. I kind of beat them up. And we were Poison Oak, Buckthorn, and was it your group we saw the deer? I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And took them up to an old gun range that's going to be 300 homes someday. And thank you, gentlemen. It was a pleasure taking you up there. And this was what I call the fast attack group. Since 2007, we've been trying to get somebody from staff interested in our issues up there. These guys, they're the winners right there. Thank you, guys. How to work with some of our idiosyncrasies we've got up there? I've got four books here. This book, you might all know what it is, 2005. It's the draft general plan for San Bernardino Valley. Pretty general book. I think it gets updated quite regularly, maybe, if it's even in use anymore. But it's just general land use for the valley. Nothing specific. Most specific areas it doesn't really cover. That's one. This was the first specific plan for Vermont, 1986. These people put together a specific plan for the build-out of Vermont. The list of acknowledgments reads kind of like the signing of the Constitution. Gordon Quill, Ringo Bell, Evelyn Wilcox, Joe Gonovan, and you can see the list is pretty long. These people put it together. They saw Vermont what needed to be done. And for the last 31 years, everybody up there has built to this. There is no specific plan for Vermont on the build-out, street layouts, flood control, drainage, specific to the area. This was the first approach to a specific plan as a proposal, not actually the specific plan, but Larry Heasy and I put this together many years ago and presented it to the city. It was blocked by one person and a couple developers because they had an agenda. don't know where it's at and what its progress is since 2008. But there was a lot of people who were in favor of it as well, a lot of staff members. That covers everything. You all remember Larry. Larry and I, and now my gang of three, have a deep, intimate relationship with Vertimont and how it has strange needs. This was a proposal for the Vertimont hiking trails. The Vertimont hiking trails was meant to be tied in with the specific infrastructure plan, to be tied in with the general plan, so that we went from a general to a specific build out in Vertimont, and then the hiking trails was to be built with all the new development, no cost to the city. Each project would build its own trail, add that on each section, and it would be maintained by the LMDs that were developed in that. So, in summation, what Vertimont needs is this book, specific plan to be developed, not by moi, but I'm suggesting, and the hiking trail. With that in mind, it will, I think, satisfy the needs of keeping Vertimont and its urban flavor, as well as smart development. We're not afraid of development in it if it's smart, but Larry used to say that if it's dumb development, it's not development. We're ready for smart development, and we would just like to see the infrastructure for that development. That's the main thing. We don't have an infrastructure that's going to support any development up there right now. Mark and Oliver and Jim, they saw that, and they saw our worries, and we will work with you guys. And the invite, I took them off-roading. You're all invited. I can take three at a time, or I'll hook up a second trailer and take another two, but I will beat you up. I'll haul you through the poison oak, the buckthorn, and whatnot. If any project comes up to, and I'm sorry about time, any project comes up in Vertimont that you have a question about, that you're not sure you can get out there to look at it, with permission of your leadership, you're welcome to come out. I'll haul you everywhere and anywhere. I might throw a little history and excitement into it, because there's a ton of history up there. I didn't get them over to the Mojave Indian Trail, but we got close. But I took them where the first white man came into. His father was a Spanish priest, came into the valley. Otherwise, it was pretty much Indian operated. And so the history is fantastic for the valley and up there in Vertimont. That's it. Just a refresher course. Hey, and don't forget, you guys are missing a baseball game right now, and I'm going to it. Thank you very much for your time.
Yes. How do we get a hold of you for a tour?
Oh, you got a pencil and paper?
I do.
909-553-8854. And if you want to text that, just tell me that you're with Planning Commission, because a lot of phone numbers, I'm getting a lot of sales stuff that I don't recognize. Just tell me you're with Planning Commission and you want to ride, and you're on.
And what was your name again?
Hank Mitchell, H-A-N-K.
Thank you.
And I live at the end of Belmont. You can't go any further than 3766. Well, I guess you go 3777. He's not built yet. But come on out to Vertimont. We're pretty proud of it. Come on out to the Little League games. These guys this year look really hot. These are good games out there.
Thank you for caring about our city.
It's been a pleasure. I only moved up there in 2000.
Thank you.
And I bumped into, I read a little bit on my ranch that was built in 1881. It started then. That was the Meyer Vineyards for 2,500 acres. I met Nick Cataldo. Bang. Now my curiosity went nuts. And between Nick and I, and we've all crawled through the hills and found so much stuff and been beat up by it, scratched up and everything else. We've got videos of bear and mountain lion and whatnot up there that we've left game cameras in. I could talk. You've got to cut me off. I'm sorry. Anything else real quick?
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
The one thing I will say, and thank you very much, Hank, that tour was fantastic.
My pleasure, believe me.
It really was fantastic. Always, the Brown Act does apply, so while Hank is more than willing to take commissioners up, you all do need to be careful, and I think a limit of three is a good idea at one time, and then just be sure that you don't, because you will be seeing projects in the Vertimont neighborhood coming before you within the near future. So that is just a word of caution so that you're not essentially recused from voting on those projects when they do come forward. So I know I'm giving Stephen's message, but it is something that commissioners need to be aware of.
Preach.
Thank you all for all you're doing.
Thanks again. Well, that brings us to the sign code.
Okay, sign code update. So we're getting close to being completed. We've finished the first three of a total of four modules that include 11 sections, which you can see listed here. It's mostly the general legal information. There are some new standards that we've put in. We've put in some standards for creative signage because we thought that was really important to start allowing people to do things that are not necessarily within the framework of, you know, just the box that, you know, was established 26 years ago. So some of the items that we're concentrating on with the update is complying with content neutrality legislation that has just come up in the last couple of years. So trying to move away from restricting signage based on the content of the sign copy and just regulating for sign type, sign location, size, illumination, not illuminated, those sorts of issues. We're trying to simplify the language and make sure that the standards are very clear. So working with the consultants, I've kind of beat up our consultants a little bit in our discussions and just said, well, let's, you know, I think this needs to be stated a little bit more clear. Somebody could misinterpret this language. So we've really tried to pare it down and make it as clear and concise as possible. And again, another area is really just focusing on creative signage and allowing some flexibility within the code. I think, you know, in planning, we sometimes look at signage as being, you know, the thing that distracts from, you know, the development. But, you know, I think you can use it to really attract people and make the center, whatever you're talking about, whatever development, even more attractive and more enticing and draw people into the city. And so that's what we're focusing on primarily. That's really it. I don't know if you, we're finishing up the last module right now. That should be done pretty soon. I just got some of my final comments to the consultant today. And so we'll have the completed draft ready for the second business community meeting. I think we'll be mailing those out next week, at the end of next week. And the second business community meeting will be scheduled for August 29th, and then another planning commission study session to follow in October. And we'll have a lot of questions for all of you, so make sure you're rested for that one. That's it, unless there's any questions that you have on what was given.
Are you going to put this on the city website?
When it's completed, absolutely.
When it's complete.
Yes, yeah. I don't think we want to put the draft versions up right now because we're still working through some legal issues or potential legalities and you know, making sure that we have a good working draft before we release it to the public.
Mr. Jones has a question.
I have two questions. The first one, the business community meeting on the 29th of this month, what time and where is the meeting going to be at?
It's at from 3 to 5 p.m. In the training room on the second floor of this building.
Okay. And also for the sign code update for now, with us allowing flexibility for like creative signs for business owners to put up, will that not like encourage, I don't want like the verbiage to be misinterpreted to where like business owners are taking advantage of it by
right.
just throwing up any kind of rigidig sign and saying that it's creative or has
right,
some
right.
sort of,
they're,
are we going to be like protected under the new development code? Because I understand we want to
yeah.
make sure that it's easy for
yeah.
them to access and
yeah.
the rules are not too flexible.
Of
but,
course.
You know, we don't want to, at the same time, like, have just any kind of sign just thrown up there
oh, yeah.
in the public. Is that going to be something that's...
Absolutely. And there will be a different process for that. We won't necessarily have to take it all the way to Planning Commission, and in, except for, you know, very special circumstances, we will hold the right to do that if we feel that it's necessary that the Planning Commission review a particular sign. But there will be a different set of kind of rules and regulations and a different process set up from just a standard sign permit. There are thresholds that you know, probably some different fees as well associated with that kind of thing. So, you know, somebody may be encouraged to do something a little bit outside of the box, but not so outside of the box as to be, you know, considered a public nuisance in some way.
Do you have a question?
I did. In the backup material, it referenced some legislative material that you need to make sure you're in compliance with. Is that what you were referencing when you talked about you really can't do anything about the content on the sign?
Yes, that would be Gilbert versus Reed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's...
So the city has zero control as a
yes.
result of that?
Yes, essentially. So some of that falls under freedom of speech laws, which
mm-hmm.
are very open.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, you know, specific standards that restrict, you know, hate speech or any kind of speech that is considered to be a public nuisance. So something that may be, you know, pornographic.
And who makes
that
determination?
That could be determined by the city, by city employees. Or, you know, our legal staff obviously would have a hand in.
Are there guidelines though that you would follow to determine that, or is it just?
We are going to be doing a very thorough legal review of the sign code before it comes to the commission. We're not going to bring something that's unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some very big developments in sign laws. The reason the sign code is separate from the rest of the development code is because it is its own weird special animal. You know, we're talking about you know, town of Gilbert. You know, that was a foundation shattering case how cities viewed, you know, what we'd essentially call temporary signs.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, communities they said, okay, realtor signs, here's the rules for realtor signs, here's the rule for temporary directional signs. And what the court said is, you know, why are you doing all these content based distinctions between these things? Isn't a temporary sign, can't you have standards for temporary signs? Like, why do you need to go into this? So we've really had to change, all of us have to change how we view these things. And we don't want to overstep. We're going to be working with legal. Legal and staff are going to be working together before it comes to you. And
if you want to take whatever limitations that are available.
Well, I think that we have dual purposes here. I think that we have to respect the First Amendment and the right to free expression, and that, you know, signs are an integral part of that. And at the same time, we want to protect the quality of our neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
We want to prevent visual blight, and we want to protect public safety. I mean, we have signs crowding out, you know, actual public safety-oriented signs like traffic signs,
mm-hmm.
Preventing line of sight while people are driving. That's a very serious concern. So you have to take all that into consideration. It's a lot of competing interests. And I think that's why staff has been having those outreach meetings to various constituencies.
And if I can add share to that. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. You want to add to it?
Yeah, the one thing I wanted to follow up on, I know that the chair had asked about putting it online. This, as Stephen said, is a little bit different than the rest of the development code, where we want to get input on everything, but because this is that court case is a monumental shift, if you will. I've been doing this for 30 years, and it's really required a lot of rethinking about how we treat signs in their entirety, because, as again, as Stephen has pointed out, there's a lot of competing interests, and we want to make sure that we walk that tightrope, if you will. So we want to get everybody's input, but we want to make sure that it's defensible when it is ultimately adopted.
So is that what this meeting on the 29th is, to get input, to give them an overview of where you're going and get input?
Yes. Yeah, that is a little bit of a community outreach that we've done, primarily with the business community, so people who would have some interest in the signage themselves, either, you know, business owners or some different sign contractors and city folks. We've had several members of the Chamber of Commerce come to the last meeting. I believe that we will see that again at this meeting. So that's the primary focus of this meeting. I think that the aggressive timeline that we had didn't allow us to have like a completely open forum with the public, other than, you know, having these planning commission meetings.
How do you notify them?
I wrote up and sent out personal letters and emails to a number of people who partly with the help of Larry Quill, because he's a member of the Chamber of Commerce, kind of helped me put together some of the lists. I put together part of the list with people that I've worked with the city and with other members of the business community.
But this is just an observation. Are you attracting owners who may be in that fine line of they really need to know this information and participate? Very small mom and pops, certain alcohol retail outlets, et cetera, et cetera. Are they coming?
Not generally speaking.
A yes or no? Not generally speaking. That's a no.
I can't give you a definitive answer on that. I don't know.
Maybe
business owners.
If I may, this came up when the sign ordinance was kicked off, and we came to the commission probably 6 or 8 months ago. We had asked for a representative, and obviously Commissioner Quill made sense. He also sits on the chamber board, I believe, right, Larry?
Yes.
Got a seat on the board. So Larry did outreach within the board membership and the general commission or chamber membership, and then Chantal worked with a lot of the regular, and Travis did as well, a lot of the regular customers we see, the sign vendors.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, unlike the remainder of the code, this is a very business-focused section, because while it affects the community, the visual aesthetics of the community, sign regulations, we believe, a staff standpoint at least, affect the business owners. And you're right, Commissioner Lopez, large business owners, small business owners, large sign contractors like Quill, and then the smaller sign contractors and permit runners. So this is a much more focused, as it says, business outreach.
I mean, this is an important thing that you're doing, and we have to have as much buy-in as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many retailers that are not tied into the chamber or more traditional outlets and business gatherings and social who do need to be here so that they are educated and that they know and they give their input, because their concerns, a very small business, which would be a mom and pop on the corner, their concerns may not be the same as a bigger operation, say to Brothers or whatever, you
sure.
know.
Yeah.
And so they need to be in the mix, and that's the only reason why I'm asking as to how they were contacted. And I would recommend maybe some non-traditional outreach for some of those that haven't come, because that's why I asked, just by based on observation. It's our observation when I did responsible beverage service to the city, is many of those, the owners, operators, were from different cultural backgrounds, and they were not tied in, but yet they were operating a business and so forth, putting up signs and so forth, and they need to be in the mix. So I don't know what you might consider.
If you have a suggestion on how to make that happen, I would be happy to work with you.
I'll tell you what we did. You know, but I don't think you're going to want to do it.
Okay.
It is outreach, real grassroots outreach.
Yeah.
But
But it, you know, we just want people to comply and have a more attractive business mix in the city and so forth and so forth. And I'm afraid that we're going to do all of this work and everything, which is very good, and I'm very pleased, but then we would not have reached some of the ones that may continue to not be in compliance.
I've tried to, at least on my end, because I know that there's, I won't be able to reach everybody.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I would like to, I won't be able to reach everybody.
Of course.
Who this will affect. But I've tried to really consider in helping to draft these new regulations, that we consider, you know, property owners that may not be able to put up a $5,000 sign, and give them some options and some regulations on how to do that. You know, if they want to do a painted sign rather than a large, you know, electric illuminated sign, give them some good established regulations on how to do that so that we don't end up with, I can think of some specific examples of painted signs within the city that were not done professionally, and you can tell that they were not done professionally, and they look bad. Mm-hmm. They look bad for the business, they look bad for the city, but I want that to be an option. I also want it to meet the aesthetics that we need for the city, so I've really tried to keep that in mind, that not everybody can afford the big, bright, fancy signs.
That's
so
brutal.
We have a big, you know.
Yes. Chantel, I want to compliment you and your staff also. The first meeting that we had was a really good meeting, a real good mix of people.
Yeah.
We had contractors. We had some private business people.
Mm-hmm.
We had people from other cities.
Yep.
We had permit runners. And we actually had a few sign companies, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important that I think we, as sign companies, also share thoughts and our input as well as owners, because we go through the permit process. And I think what you're doing, and it was brought up in that meeting, you gave everybody an opportunity to speak. And the people hosting the meeting that were putting together the program listened clearly, and they made a complete list.
Mm-hmm.
Is all the terminology needs to be the same from city to city. You'll go to one city, and you'll ask for something, and they recognize it differently as we may at this city. So I think we're really accomplishing something there. And one thing that I'm really hoping that I see in this ordinance when it all comes together is some sort of a enforcement tool to get down the abandoned signs that actually, that's the blight in our community.
Right,
and we've
right.
all seen that for a long time.
Right.
And a long time ago, there was a program. Matter of fact, Bob Holcomb put it together. And there was an abatement program that worked pretty well until they took down too many signs, and actually the city was threatened to get sued because of some of the signs that were coming down.
Yeah.
So I know there's obstacles there, but some of these abandoned signs that have been up for a long time but no sign faces in them, one place in question right now is Del Rosa and the freeway, the old Italian store next to the Shell station. That sign burnt. That place burned down 8 years ago, 10 years ago. The signs are still there advertising the Italian restaurant. So that is the kind of blight that we have in our community that I'd like to see taken care of. So if we could do that, that would help immensely cleaning up the first perception that people see the city.
We have considered that. I put a lot of thought into that, and there's really, in drafting regulations for signage, there's only so much that we can do in terms of, you know, taking care of, you know, existing signage that may not be conforming anymore or may cause blight in some way. So this is typically regulation for new signage, but some of the things that we're looking at least to make code enforcement's job a little bit easier, is bringing back the label system. So when you get a new sign, you have, you know, your label, it's kind of a bar scan type of thing, a sticker that goes on the sign. You know, code enforcement goes out there, they happen to notice a new sign, and for the most part, they're gonna know which signs have already been existing for a long time.
Right.
If they see something new go up and they see that there's not a sticker there, they can look it up and see if there's a permit easily, or they can just know because there's not a sign that this sign was put up without permits. That will make it a little bit easier in terms of new signage.
Sure.
Old signage, that's a little bit of another issue. We're going to try and tackle that as a department, but that's going to take a little bit more than just drafting new regulations.
Well, thank you again for the approach that the city has taken on this and getting the business community involved. Appreciate that.
I welcome it.
I'd like an overview of where the current regulations reside and what we'll have after you finish your update. I think they're in Title 16 and 19 right now, aren't they?
Yes, they're in Title 19 of the Municipal Code, which is the development code, and that has all the zoning standards. Currently, they're under Chapter 19.22.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
I also saw 16, which doesn't have much in it. I'm wondering why those aren't combined.
We're as part of this update, we are combining those.
And we'll
because the Title 16, I believe, was just the street banners, and I'm not exactly sure why that was separated or at what point that was done. But we've decided that does create a little bit of inconsistency, I guess, and so we wanted to put everything together. So we are doing that as part of the update.
Will the new sign code be a part of Title 19?
Travis, you want to?
Yes, it will be a separate chapter within the overall development code.
Okay.
In a follow-up to the outreach that she was referring to, isn't there another Chamber of Commerce? Isn't there a Hispanic Chamber of Commerce in the city also?
I believe that there is also a Black Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, and there may be, yeah. And you guys have put outreach to
I don't have their specific contact information. I can try to get that and see if we can send out some additional invites.
I believe the Black Chamber is based in Fontana.
Oh.
But we can certainly invite them.
That's true.
Yeah, we can certainly invite them. They're based in
yeah.
Fontana.
And what about the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce?
I don't know where they're based out of. But we can certainly do that.
Just
because, as Chantal said, we do want to get outreach.
Sure.
It's always a challenge on every project that we work on. So we're open to ideas. One thing I will say about the meeting on the 29th, again, with the Brown Act, if commissioners do plan on attending, because I saw many of you writing that down, can you please let Melina know? Because basically we're going to have to cut it off after I think two more commissioners, because Commissioner Quill is the commission's official representative. So if there are two other commissioners that would like to attend, I guess the first two that say yes can go. But after that, I am concerned about Brown Act issues. So
we'll beat you guys up in October.
Yes.
You'll have plenty of time to
yeah.
look at all
you're, that. A subset of you are invited. I guess it's the best thing that I can say.
I think we were writing down the tour, not
yeah.
that one.
Oh, yeah.
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 I volunteer to leave a spot open.
Did anybody else have any questions?
It is. Okay.
All right.
Thank you. And now to the development code update.
Last item tonight, picking back up from last week, is item 4 is the update just on the remainder of the development code. At the last meeting, I distributed three chapters. That was the general provisions, the zoning districts, and the administration procedures. I don't know if everyone's had a chance to look through those at all.
Did you happen to bring any extra tonight?
I know what I might have a couple at my desk, but I'm not sure exactly where they are. I apologize.
I went through it online, but it's sometimes easier to have it.
Yeah, no, I completely understand. I always need the physical in front of me. So just a quick kind of update, just kind of on generally what we were doing with the development code. I know it's been going on for quite a while, so we've had people in and out, and I don't know if everyone's heard everything. The main goals of what we're trying to do here are really boiled down to kind of three things. It's streamlining it, you know, trying to make a more efficient document, simplifying it, probably so it's easier for both staff and the public to read and interpret, and eliminating the redundancies. There's a lot of things, especially over 25 years, it's been used, things have been added and cut and replaced and moved around, and there's a lot of duplicated information within the document. The big things that we're doing in order to do those, or to achieve those three goals, is consolidating the zoning districts and the land uses. I know we've discussed before, we have 11 commercial zones. It's a little much when there's minimal distinctions, if any, between any of them. We're also consolidating a lot of the land uses, which will help, again, both staff and the public have more flexibility in how we can establish things. Still, obviously, addressing the concerns that we have in the general plan for, you know, health, safety, and welfare, but businesses are evolving constantly. And, you know, when we just have a rigid land use that says you can only sell this product and that alone, that doesn't really work as people are trying to go into new ventures. It's also reorganizing. Like I said, things have been moved around. Things are in the wrong chapters or they're repeated. And we want to put it all in a logical place so you know if you're looking for, you know, parking standards, you go to one section only. And then establishing some uniform standards, both for development of the properties. You know, there are certain things that are specific to certain land uses, but the majority is, you know, you have to do these types of improvements, here's the requirements, you have to have this type of access, things like that. And also uniform standards for a lot of the procedural issues. You know, I know Chantal is dealing a lot of that with the signage, but just in general with the entitlement permits that we process, want to create better standards for how we review them, how we process them, how they're enforced, you know, and so on. Of the three chapters that I did distribute at the last meeting, just kind of a general idea, as kind of recapping what was in the memo that was inserted in your packet last week. Just kind of a little overview of the three chapters, what they are. The general provisions, it's pretty standard. The purpose of that is really just establishing the authority of the code as the enforcement tool for development, and the applicability. So, you know, what the certain standards are going to apply to. Creating some rules for interpretation, again, because we're trying to establish some flexibility in the code, and there's a number of things that even now are, you know, are questionable. If I look at it, does it mean this, does it mean that? With so many people using and reading the document, it's always hard to have a clear standard, so we want to try to get that in there. And then the first chapter also will have all the enforcement provisions. Currently, that's a separate chapter in the code, but we want to put that in there up front. This is how we're going to, you know, enforce the conditions that are imposed on projects. This is what's going to happen if you violate those, and so on and so forth. And then some difference from the way that it currently is, and I'm going to come back to this idea a lot because of the reorganization, is moving a couple sections out of this chapter, because we want to create, aside from the sign section, because we said it, that is kind of its own code on its own, or to itself, it's creating kind of a uniform definition section. So creating the chapter just for that, so you know where to go for everything. So those would be pulled out of the equivalent of this in the current code, and then moving the review authorities out of the general provisions into the administration section. The second chapter is just the zoning districts. The main thing that's going to do, this chapter is really a consolidation of a lot of sections of the existing chapters. And really what it's meant to do is establish what the zoning districts are, establish the map, the overlays, codify our specific plans. Currently, I think we have, I forget the exact number of specific plans. It's somewhere around 7 or 8, somewhere, you know, close to 10, and we have, I believe, 2 in the code. So you don't necessarily know, does one exist in this area, and that's a little confusing. But we are not going to include those as the full documents, because those are often the size of, you know, half the code. So they'll be incorporated just as reference and then maintained separately for utilization in development. And the other big thing with the zoning districts, and this goes to the consolidation that I mentioned, would be eliminating a proposed
proposed elimination of a number of existing zoning overlays and specific plans. The zoning district overlays that we're proposing to eliminate, right now we currently have two airport overlays. It's very confusing reading them from staff standpoint, especially. We don't know exactly what applies to what. We have been working with the IBDA and the airport authority to figure out exactly what standards are still necessary. You know, how can we combine the two and just get it down to one? I'm going to jump out of order just briefly, and I'll say the Central City South, which encompasses kind of the area around the ballpark, basically Rialto down to Mill, and the Main Street overlay, which encompasses just all of downtown, would both be eliminated because we're working on a downtown-specific plan, which would encompass that larger area, so they would be redundant. The emergency shelter really only establishes where you can do shelters in the city. It says in a couple certain zoning districts that would be removed and just added, added just as a land use within the table to make it simpler. Freeway really just establishes some standards for signage when you're closer to the freeway, and that'll already be addressed in the sign chapter. And then the Tri-City area, which is all of the office park around hospitality, that from our standpoint is functionally built out, and the document is really guiding the development. So it's not really a necessary tool any longer for the maintenance of that proper of that area. And then the specific plans, we have the University Business Park, which is up along Hallmark, kind of behind Walmart up there, that runs about halfway back up along Hallmark. Most of that area is pretty much built out. It's an industrial area, and there's really not much distinction between the industrial zones on their own. And then the Paseo Las Placitas, which is the area all, up and down a significant stretch of Mount Vernon, kind of around 5th, and then north of there. That is, that was something that was adopted around the time the current code was, I think just a couple of years prior. It has never been implemented in any significant way. It's outdated. It's unlikely that it's ever going to be implemented in the way it was intended. We feel it's time to kind of do a reset on that area, see what's going to be the best tool for guidance going forward with the adoption of the new code, with the new signage regulations and everything else. And the last chapter that you were given was the administration and procedures. This is really now establishing the review authorities, which I mentioned are being moved. And the entire process, just start to finish, in the order that it happens, of you submit an application, staff reviews it, we go to hearings, how we adopt things, appeals, and then referencing the enforcement. Nothing there is really changing in any significant way from the procedures that we have currently. Most of what we have in the code is fairly straightforward, and it works. There hasn't really been any hangouts. The only thing that we're really looking to add is some additional notification. You know, with all the other tools we've done, the major projects list, and you know, the newsletters and everything, we've done a lot of steps to get information about the big projects out, but that's a lot of the time after the fact, or you know, it's harder to figure out kind of where things are. I know that list is very long. Sometimes it's hard to kind of pin down what's in my ward. So we're looking to do, you know, similar to a lot of the other cities, and do the notification on site when we have significant projects. And we have put some thresholds that we drafted into that chapter for what would take, or what kind of trigger the on-site notification. I do have the numbers in front of me, but it's your larger commercial developments, your residential over a certain size, when you get over a certain acreage on the property, you know, the bigger items like that. And then the one other big thing that we're doing with the procedural, which I know I had mentioned before, but I know it's been a while, so it's worth recapping, is splitting the land use and development entitlements. Currently, you know, we have our conditional use permits they're to cover conditional uses. They also cover the development of the property. We're gonna, you know, split those two ideas. You have something that's establishing just land use, or you have something that's establishing the development. Certain properties may take both, but that will free up a lot of uses when they just want to improve their building. They don't necessarily have to go through a full conditional use permit, because that would be more to the physical improvements. And then that kind of covers what was given at the last meeting. And
in the packet that we sent out last week, we gave just a couple of small sections, kind of an excerpt from the land use chapter, looking at some of the specific standards. I know we dove into this a lot more at the study session we had, I think it's a year ago this month, or will be at the end of the month, when we looked at the land use chapter with the matrix that we had proposed and the majority of the specific standards for uses. Now we wanted to go back to just the ones we really hadn't addressed, kind of the big ticket items we always know we have concerns with. The two that we just included for this evening were the adult businesses and the recycling facilities. What we're trying to do with those, I'll try to make it, it gets a little confusing even when I'm going through it. The ordinances that we have in the code, there's really not an issue with the standards that we have. They're enforceable, they work, they meet the desires that we have for them, but they're very hard to read. And a lot of that stems from the fact that they were added after the fact, after the original adoption, and written as standalone ordinances and inserted into the code. So there's a number of things in there about procedural issues, about the enforcement of any permits that are already elsewhere in the code. They don't necessarily need to be repeated land use by land use. That's a lot of the redundancy that I mentioned earlier. So we're really looking to just kind of clean those out, move the items, like I have the definitions, the enforcement, and the procedural issues into their appropriate sections. So you know very clearly, I want to know how are we defining this? I look here, and the sections that are retained in the land use chapter are really speaking to just kind of the development and operational concerns for that use, like we have for the remainder of things. What we did in the packet to try to make it as clear as possible was I set and redlined those two sections, just kind of noting section by section, you know, where would this go to? We would retain this. Would we define this as an operational standard or locational or so on? Just so we can kind of see how that is going to work. Those wouldn't be the only sections that we do that to. There's a couple more that do exist in the code, but we wanted to give an idea of, you know, how are we looking at reorganizing this? Again, not cutting anything, just putting everything in its proper place. And then, really, our next item on this one, we do have one more study session coming up just for the dev code before we get to the signage. That would be next month on the 12th. As we've done, you know, we'll get the information out prior with the packet, and then hopefully have another review session at this meeting. Those chapters that we'd be looking at are really getting into the development standards, which are going to talk about our densities and our setbacks and heights and all the improvements that have to be done, and the non-conforming provisions. And with that, I know I've spoken quite a bit, so I'll open it up if you do have any questions kind of on what we, the general direction we're going, or anything that we've distributed. I'm happy to answer anything.
I have a question.
Yes.
Over the years, we've seen a lot of our older properties in the city. People will come into the city and want to put a new type of business in there or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. And some of the restrictions are setbacks or landscaping or parking and so on.
Mm-hmm.
It always seems as though it's been a little bit of a hurdle to, we hear from these business owners, a little bit of a hurdle to accommodate the rules and regulations mm-hmm. with the older properties. Is there going to be is there a separate rule for that? Or
yeah,
how do you do that?
We do have, the current code speaks to that a little bit,
yeah.
But it's definitely very confusing. I know we, you know, we've had a lot of very passionate discussions about that at a staff level when we have those types of projects. Because like you said, we're an old city,
yeah.
You know, and we have a lot of vacant properties that fortunately people are now coming back to, and they want to reoccupy or they want to redevelop or sometimes establish different uses there. What we have in the code right now is, you know, could definitely be better. It really doesn't speak to all of the issues. With the non-conforming section, one of the big things we're looking to add to that is about, you know, adapting the old properties. You know, what can we do? Establishing some better thresholds. Certainly, there's things that are just going to have to be upgraded that we don't have the authority to waive, like the accessibility. That comes from beyond us. We don't have the ability to really waive that.
So those types of improvements would still have to be done, but there's a lot of accommodations we can make for parking. You know, some of, if you have an existing building, obviously we're not gonna ask you to pick it up and move it 3 feet because your setback is too small. And we can establish a lot of that. So I'm looking to, I would expect to see something significant about that in Chapter 7 when we do bring that. But it is definitely a big issue. It's something we've been working on.
Another thing, in that group you had, I think it was titled at Main, was that Main Street?
Yes.
What you're saying? And you're talking about Southeast Street and the downtown area?
Yeah, the,
and the theater?
Those two overlays that we have currently, the Central City South is what the name of it is. It's actually broken up into two overlays, and I'm not exactly sure why. That's the area, more or less, East Street to the freeway, and then Rialto down to Middle. So quite a large area. It's meant to be, the way it's established is more of kind of the big entertainment hub. I think originally meant to capitalize on the ballpark and all of that, but you know, obviously that didn't necessarily move forward as people had originally thought. And then there's the Main Street overlay, which encompasses pretty much, you know, from there up to about 5th or 6th, I forget the street, the freeway, and probably over to around Arrowhead. So pretty much the whole mall and the rest of downtown. There would be no need for those as standalone overlays because of the specific plan that we're going to be working on. That would cover the, we have, with the consolidation of the zones, we will have a downtown zone, which will cover pretty much that entire area and have standards for all of that instead of the two or three different zoning districts we have in there currently. And we'd have that specific plan that's going to use a lot of those same standards, but in a larger, more comprehensive area.
Thank you. Another question?
Yeah.
A lot of new development going on out on East Highland, you know, since we have the off-ramps there now and the service stations that are going up. I'm sure you've had to make some changes in some of that zoning out there. But is that area, are you incorporating that area?
Which part are you talking about?
That would be west of West Highland Avenue, where the 210 cuts across all the way over there to pretty much where Muskoy is?
Oh, okay. Sorry, on West Highland. I apologize. Can you repeat the question?
Well, my question was, you have a few service stations going on over there?
Mm-hmm. Over kind of off of Macy in that
right.
area.
So when that area started developing, did you put together a plan over there?
You know what? There hasn't ever been anything over there. That area is really tough because only about half of the street there is in the city. Oh. I know we've known from when we've looked at some of the projects over there, especially some of the alcohol projects. I recall specifically some maps that have been put together because there's a lot of the businesses that...
Oh, that's county.
When you get just south of Muskoy there, a lot of the frontage on Highland just hopscotches. You know, this one's in the city, this one's in the county, and so on. So it's really hard to do something, you know, comprehensive on that entire stretch because it's not just us doing it. So that one's definitely been a bit of a struggle. But
will existing developments be affected by like the new development of code update? Will there have to be like any like deviations or modifications they would need to make once the new development code is like fully implemented? Or will the projects that they're currently like working on like still qualify within the proposed framework?
There's a couple answers to that. Anything that's in process, and I know it's written into, I believe it's into the first chapter, anything that we've already accepted, that we've already deemed a complete application when the code is being updated, as long as it's already been deemed complete before the code has taken effect, it still gets processed under the code that was applicable when it came in. I would say, I mean, we're not, I hope with what we're putting together, we're actually putting together a better document that's going to give them even more allowances and get better projects. That's certainly been the goal. But if there is ever an issue with something that changes, they would be under that previous code for the duration of that project or for the duration of the development. Things that have already been approved, they're already built, anything that's just an existing business,
the non-conforming provisions are going to apply to that. There's nothing in there that will then make the business illegal should something change, or if the entitlement requirement changes, they won't be, you know, they won't have any issue. But like with all of our older businesses we have right now that were there even before the code from the early 90s, you know, there may be some limitations, or there may be some other, you know, things that get required should they come in and do anything significant to their property.
Can I add something to it? For the development code and the sign code alike, I know Travis and I have both worked really hard to make sure that we're not creating a lot of new non-conformities. Some of that is going to be a little bit inevitable in updating the regulations, but we've tried to be aware of that.
I have another question.
Yeah,
by all means. Before a business opens the doors to the community or the public, mm-hmm. they need an occupancy permit, I believe, don't they?
Yes, the building itself.
Okay.
Would not.
So to get an occupancy permit, they come down to City Hall and they pay for it and they get a permit. Does that trigger an inspection to go out and look at the property before they open?
There's a couple different things there. Just when a business is looking to open, they just have to get, you know, a zoning clearance from us, saying that the zoning is, or that type of business is okay in that area, and they have to get the registration certificate from business registration. The certificate of occupancy that you're talking about, that doesn't come up with every business that comes in. That speaks more to the structure. I don't want to get too much into the building code because I'll probably misquote something. But that speaks more to the structure and the type of use that's in it. That it is certified for that type of occupancy. So if you have commercial, you know, a little strip retail center, there's just general retail in it, business closes, another general retail business wants to go in, there hasn't been any change to that type of use in that building. So they would just go straight through the zoning clearance and the business registration. And typically there's no inspection required for those, unless they're doing improvements to it, and then you have to go through the standard
building inspection.
You know, if it's just a turnkey suite and they can just move right in, then there really wouldn't be. But when something wants to go in and it was, you know, an old office building or retail and they want to put an assembly use in there, certainly that's now changing the occupancy class. And that would require a new certificate. That would require inspections, both from building, fire, everyone to go out there and actually look at it to make sure that it is suitable for that type of use. There's nothing.
Anything else?
I guess I did too good of a presentation, but I'll take that.
We're certainly expecting more questions. This is a very comprehensive undertaking, and I know it's taken us longer than we thought, but we're being very, mostly Travis and Chantal are being very methodical and very thorough, and we've also worked a lot with the front counter staff to gather their input as well, because they deal with the public, you know, all day, every day. So we're trying to be as comprehensive as we can be, which is why it's taking longer than we thought.
Well, so far I think you guys are doing a good job. I think that the focus you guys are really zeroing in on as far as eliminating the redundancies and really streamlining it and making business better to do in San Bernardino for the staff and for the public and for the developers and the builders and all of that. I think that the focus and the direction you guys are really working in right now is going to play a really big role in helping San Bernardino in the future. And I think you guys are doing a really good job on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If there's nothing else, we'll call for public comments. Hearing none, Planning Commission reports or announcements. Okay.
Have you ever considered, or did the Planning Commission ever meet more than once a month? Because it's kind of sad that, you know, we have to put someone off a whole month before they can get their work done. And I didn't know if your volume is such that meeting monthly is sufficient. Are you precluded from that, from by the new charter or by the old charter? Or?
The commission rules are not set in the charter for the frequency of meetings. The commission did meet prior. They met twice a month previously.
Which I see a lot of cities.
I don't know when that changed.
It was around 2011.
Just you didn't have enough business.
At that time,
you know,
probably.
Yeah.
That would be the logical answer.
Mm-hmm. But just
none
a
of
thought.
Us were here.
Yeah, it I did feel very badly for the applicants that were here. There is, and maybe I should mention it at the time, there is the ability for the chair and the commission to have adjourned regular meetings where you would adjourn this meeting not to your meeting on September 12th, but you would find a date on August 29th, for instance, and then continue items to that meeting. That's an option. Then there are also special meetings, which the council does more frequently than the Planning Commission, but the Planning Commission could also, if there's the necessity, hold a special meeting. That just requires different types of notification, but certainly the commission could meet more than once a month. At least in the 3 years that I've been here, we've not had probably more than three meetings that have gone more than 2 hours. So I think at this point, there's really not the need, based upon the volume of projects, to meet more than once a month. And yes, it is unfortunate when projects get pushed, you know, 4 weeks or 5 weeks to the next available meeting. But there are options that the commission has.
Just a thought.
If the need arises, yeah.
Any other announcements from the commission? If not, we'll go to the director's report.
Thank you, Chair. I actually just have a very brief report. Molina does have copies of the major projects list. You will notice that there's been some changes that have been made. I've been working with Oliver and Molina to keep some of the larger projects that are on there longer, because those have, even though the commission may have approved the project and the council may have approved the project, they haven't pulled building permits. We do get questions that people ask about those, so we've added some projects back in that are still valid entitlements. They just haven't moved to construction yet.
I have to tell you, I've said before that I shared this with some other people in the community, and they were thrilled to see this, because they actually saw activity happening in the city when they didn't think anything was happening.
Yeah, I think if all you do is know your neighborhood, and that's not a disparagement, that's people know what they know. You know, we tend to drive the same streets to work every day and go to largely the same restaurants or retailers, so you don't, especially in a city of this size and scope, you don't tend to get out of your neighborhood. So we do encourage people, any of the commissioners, if you want us to add people to the list, there is a monthly distribution list, and we'll add anybody's name to it. It also goes to all of the NAC presidents, so they get it, and I encourage them, and maybe Commissioner Lopez can encourage them to share with their neighbors and friends as well. The only other thing that I'd like to mention is we do have new identification badges for the commissioners, and the city clerk's office is trying to coordinate a photo session. And those two dates, they're tentative dates. I believe Molina sent them out. One is tomorrow at 3 o'clock, and then the next one is the 16th at 8 a.m. And if you can't make either one of those, Molina can work with the clerk's office to schedule photographs. And that concludes my report.
Well, I guess that concludes our meeting. So I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I will make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
A motion and second. Those opposed?
Those are.
Anyone opposed? The motion carries.
You
want
to cut them off the legs.
Oh.
You don't want to stay and talk?
It's got really cold in here.
It really
it's
did.
It's great air conditioning, but boy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.